Coming up on the show today, we are joined by the much-anticipated mystery host. Stay tuned to find out who that is. We talk all about Chromebooks and the Google experience in the classroom. And we play our interview with Peter Iles, principal from Grace Lutheran School in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, about his Chromebook experience, the very first school to introduce Chromebooks into the classroom. All that and more on the WASTech Podcast coming up next. This is WASTech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the WASTech Podcast. This is episode 207 for Wednesday, October 26th, 2011. Joining me, as usual, Sally Draper from beautiful Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. Hopefully no snow there yet, Sally.
We had a little flutter through the sky last week, Martin, but not today.
No, it's got a stick.
No sticking.
And you have to use a shovel. It doesn't count.
Yeah. And also joining us today for the very first time, a debut guest host with us. We kind of teased the audience a little last week, Martin. We didn't announce who this was, but we are happy to have with us Jason Schmidt.
Morning, Jason.
Omaha, Nebraska.
Morning, Martin. Good morning, Sally.
And really not the very first time. He's been on the show before, but not in this capacity. This is our classroom technology show, and we do that once a month. And in the past, we've had Gail Potratz, and Gail is not leaving us. We're just kind of mixing things up and kind of, well, maybe trade off between Gail and Jason. And those that remember Jason, remember that he served as an elementary school teacher in Omaha. And now you're serving in a little bit different capacity, Jason. Tell us a little bit about what you're up to these days.
Well, these days I am working for a public school district here in Omaha. I'm a technology facilitator. Mm-hmm. So basically what my job is, I kind of split it between technical support and instructional support. So working with teachers to find resources and integrate them into their teaching, use that as best practices, and keep that in line with state objectives and district objectives and mm-hmm. national objectives and all that kind of stuff. So it's been a real challenging thing, but it's also been a lot of fun. I'm really enjoying myself.
Great. So do you work directly with teachers as far as hearing from them what their needs are, or is it more are you trying to figure out what might work best for them and then doing some training, those kinds of things?
Yes.
Okay.
I do both. when teachers have something that they want to use, I'm the guy who gets to go out and get it and play with it for a little while and figure it out, and then train the teachers. Mm-hmm. Or if the teachers are already using something and using it well, then it's partly my job to observe them and see how they're doing with it, and then take that to the rest of the teachers.
Sure.
To see who else might benefit from
it. So is this on the elementary school level or high school as well?
Once again, the answer is yes.
Okay.
One hour I might be working with preschoolers and iPads, and then 2 hours later I might be working with high school seniors making a video. So there's a lot of variety and a lot of different things that I do.
How many? What are the numbers there that you serve as far as students and faculty?
We have 140 different teachers, mm-hmm. And that includes special education and specialists and those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Then we have about 1,200 students looking to add. We're growing at a rate of about 200 kids a year.
Really?
So yeah. So the district doubles in size about every 5 years.
Who knew? Everybody's moving to Omaha.
Everybody's moving out of Omaha to our district. We're kind of in the suburbs.
Ah, so okay.
A lot of new housing and a lot of new
interesting,
a lot of new things going
growth
up around
areas.
Here.
So, well, that's exciting that you get to look at new technology and look at how that's implemented in the classroom, and that's really what this particular show is about. We are really going to focus on one particular technology or approach to technology and actually one company that's kind of taking the lead in this approach as they're trying to get computers in the hands of kids in the classroom. And we're going to speak specifically about a new hardware device, and actually not even just a hardware device, it's a new concept called a Chromebook. And we mentioned this on the show in the past, but we didn't go into much detail. But in short, a Chromebook is a notebook computer. It's a little bit, I wouldn't call it a netbook, it's a little bit bigger. Most of them are. There's a couple models out there now. But what's most interesting about it is it's essentially just a computer that runs a browser, in this case the Chrome browser. And the computing experience is all within a browser. And there are advantages, and you know, there are some probably some disadvantages. But we felt that being a classroom technology focused show, this would be a great topic, as I know there are classrooms across Wells, teachers, principals, school boards thinking about this concept of trying to get computers into the hands of kids other than the traditional computer lab experience.
So, Martin, you have been working on a blog series around Chromebooks. I understand you have one in your hot little hands and mm-hmm. have had the Chromebook experience. When you say it's just browser-based, that means that there's no local file storage at all. Everything is done on the web, in the cloud. So that's kind of a shift from what we've been used to with traditional computing. And mm-hmm. I guess it's really a good fit for the education spectrum. Jason, you'd probably agree that, you know, having your work out in the cloud allows the kids to work at school easily, but then transition to the home environment and be able to access their work there.
Yeah, and I think that's a real big game changer for the way that education technology operates. You know, it used to be that you were tied to an operating system and you were tied to a file system and a particular location or a particular machine. But with Google Docs and all of those different kind of cloud-based services, you really don't have the same kind of limitations that we had even 3 or 4 years ago. You know, things have just come so far, and this is a really, really compelling topic, I think, not just in education, but in business and the way that people just operate in general.
Yeah, I was just getting used to buying the flash drive on the school supply list. You know, my kids had to have one to start school, and now you don't need flash drives anymore if we're going to the cloud. So, big difference.
Yeah, and I'm probably 3/4 of the way through my review. I probably got 6 or 7 blog posts up there about my experiences with it, and I'm trying to, as much as possible, replicate the classroom environment. And we'll hear from Principal Peter Isles in a minute here. I went up to Grace Lutheran in Oshkosh, one of our elementary schools, who were the first school to implement the Chromebooks in their classroom. I guess in my experience, I see the sweet spot for this particular device as being the classroom over and against, I think, business at this point. There's probably potential there, but it has a further way to go, a longer way to go, to meet the needs of business or even the school office or the church
yeah.
office than the classroom. One of the biggest advantages I see for the Chromebook is just the ease of maintenance and setup and management, where we've got busy administrators, we have busy technology folks within the schools. Usually it's not their full-time job. Trying to provide a consistent and safe computing experience for the students. And also the teachers, giving them something that's easy for them to set up and manage within the context of, you know, the day-to-day work of the classroom. And with the tools that Google has put in place, especially the administration console, it is very easy for one, and you'll hear Peter talk about this too in the interview later, it's very easy for one person to truly manage many, many, many devices. There's almost zero setup. And the management, once you have it initially set up, is almost zero as well. So the way it works, if anybody's ever used a Chrome browser, you have this web store, and you can install applications within the kind of the opening screen menu, just little tile icons that you click on, and then it launches essentially a web page with a web app running in it. What you can do from the administrative console is pre-configure the console for the particular student, or in most cases it would be for a particular classroom. So the eighth grade classroom would have this set of apps. The seventh grade classroom might have this set of apps. And the students can grab any Chromebook. Doesn't matter which one they grab, as long as they type in their username and password, the system will know which class they're in, and the Chromebook will, each one will act just like the other one. So there's no installation necessary of certain files. There's not a lot of user management necessary once you're past that initial setup. It's really an optimal experience. And then the other thing that I've observed, at least in the classroom, which is probably underestimated the importance as you're comparing it with regular computers or netbooks, is the speed at which you can get to work. Jason, you've probably experienced this too in playing with it. You can basically open the lid and be on, you know, in a web app in 10 to 15 seconds.
Oh yeah, it takes seconds. It's really slick. That's one of the killer features, I think, mm-hmm. of the Chromebook, is just the speed with which it starts up and wakes up from sleep and connects to a network and all of that kind of stuff. That's been really great.
And that's so important in a classroom setting where you can't be spending, you know, 3-4 minutes waiting for the kids' computers to boot up, and some of them are booting up at different speeds, and, you know, if there's any issues with that, then it just totally breaks up the classroom experience and the educational experience. With this, it's like opening a textbook and going to a certain page. It doesn't take any longer than that. Very well suited in that regard.
I had to laugh. I have a good video to share in the show notes. It's Google's introduction to the Chromebook for Education, and you'll have to watch it. It's very well done. Gives a good overview of all the features and the administration and things like that. But they say that it boots up in 8 seconds, and you can't even fold a paper airplane in that amount of time. So there you go. The true standard.
Yeah. And it is truly that fast. They're not making this stuff up. There is an actual hard drive, an SSD, a solid-state drive, in the Chromebooks. The model that I have, which is a Samsung, has a 16-gigabyte solid-state drive. So it's not totally true that there's no storage. There is some storage, and you can save some stuff to it, but it's very limited. The Chromebook that I have also has external storage available. It has a USB port, so you could hook up an external drive to it. It also has an SD card slot, so you could put that in there too. So if students needed to transfer files or whatever, they could really do that. But really the thought, and I think the vision that Google has for it, is that you really don't need that. That you're basically living in the cloud. You're either Google Docs or whatever other cloud-based service you want to use, and that would be sufficient. So I think they're pretty close to that. And as you read through my blog post, which we'll post in the show notes as well, there are some challenges with that. You know, Google Docs is not the same as Microsoft Word, for instance. So there are some trade-offs. There are some gaps where an online environment is not going to be the same as a desktop environment. And that's probably one of the big reasons I say it's probably better for classroom experience than it is for, you know, the church or school office experience, because there are, you know, there's some things, you know, mail merge comes to mind, and a few of those other things that are kind of baked into the desktop products that are a little bit more of a challenge in the online environment.
Regarding the administration, and before we leave that topic too far in the dust, I just wanted to mention the ability to get the laptops replaced if there's mm-hmm. any problem. You mentioned that there's a solid state drive. I guess they're a little bit stronger or sturdier than most, and can probably take a little bit of abuse potentially.
You mean solid state versus a regular right. platter based? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's no moving parts. There's no magnetic field. It's basically RAM. Mm-hmm.
And I don't even remember. Does it even have a fan, Martin? I don't think.
Nope.
It even
I've
has
never
a fan.
Heard a fan go on. So, at least in the one that I've got. So.
Yeah, I haven't heard that either.
And in the interview, Peter actually talks about the pricing that is involved, but that pricing includes 24/7 support. So, you know, a lot of times when we buy equipment, we don't always purchase those support plans and things, but with the Chromebooks, that's built into it.
Jason, in your experience down there, you're probably just testing it out like I am. Is there any are there any plans in your school district to do any testing with these?
Yeah, we're looking at it. We're probably going to try to get some into students' hands in the next couple of months here, just to kind of field test it a little bit and see what the management console is like, and see if it's a real viable option, and particularly at our high school, is what we're looking at.
Right, right. Very interesting concept, and obviously Google is the first in the water here to try something like this. But at least in my observations, and it was great to be able to go up to Oshkosh and see these in action versus just how I might think they would work, to see how they actually function in a classroom. And to be honest, I think they're totally viable, and the concept is doable. We should probably talk a little bit about cost. Peter, in the interview, will talk a little bit about cost as well, but there's a couple different pricing models. The main one, and we'll talk to another one, we'll talk about the alternate after we hear from Peter. The main one is a per-month charge, and it's essentially signing up for a three-year contract for $20 a month. That's for the non-3G version. There is a 3G version that you can get, I think it's 100 or 200 megabytes. I think it's 100 megabytes per month of 3G service. So basically, you can hook up to Verizon or AT&T. I forget which one it is, or maybe it's both.
I think they've got two versions,
right.
Yeah.
So you can, you know, download email, those kinds of things, do a little bit of document management, but that's not a lot, and in my mind, not worth the three extra bucks a month just to get that. Especially if you're not sending the Chromebooks home with the kids, which is the Grace Oshkosh model, where they're just using classroom, and then the beauty of the web, or beauty of, you know, kind of living on the web, is that all of your documents are stored there, and you can get access to them from any device. So basically, you get the device from Google for $20 a month, so you can do the math over 3 years. So there is an investment there. But as you mentioned, Sally, that does cover, you know, it's full warranty. So if there's anything that goes wrong, other than, you know, dropping it out the second, you know, story window, you're going to get it replaced. And it's a really easy thing to get replaced because there's no installation necessary. You just add it to the group, and you give it to a student. They just turn it on, and it goes. Maybe another thing beyond pricing, which is kind of important if you're thinking about classroom use, is battery life. Because it's a solid-state drive, because there's not a lot of things going on within the device itself, it gets really good it has really good battery life. It's about 8.5 hours, I think. In my experience, it's been at least that. And Google says, at least the Samsung version, and the other one from, is it Asus or Acer? Is it Acer?
I think it's Acer.
I think it's Acer.
Yeah, Acer. Maybe gets a little bit less, but that's true. That's under what Google says or Samsung says is 8.5 under regular use. So it's not just in standby mode. It's, you know, people banging on it, and I found that to be true too, which is really important in the classroom. You don't want to have to be, you know, charging these things in the middle of the day. Basically, what Grace and Oshkosh does is lets the students have them for the day, they plug them in at night, and they're ready for the next day. So it's a pretty simple process.
Very good. Before we get too far down the Chromebook path, we should also mention there are resources that will be available in the show notes about one-to-one computing in general. Mm-hmm. So lots of great websites are springing up, community-driven, collaborative
Sure.
websites that have one-to-one school resources. So if you're looking to have a one-to-one experience in your classroom, you might want to check out some of these. Getting Started, Classroom Management Tips. There's a whole Ning network called Classroom 2.0
right,
that's
right.
focused on one-to-one computing in the classroom. So lots of great stuff out there. And then specific to Chromebooks, we have a lot of good resources to share in that regard too. Google's done some Chromebook for Education webinars that they've archive, so you can watch some of their webinars about getting started and customizing your Chromebook. Mm-hmm. So lots of good stuff in the show notes today.
Jason, as you think about one-to-one computing, maybe the thing that's kind of overlooked in my mind is the impact on the teachers and their teaching style. Peter mentions it in the interview here in a minute, too. As you think about that and as you teach teachers to use technology, I'm sure that's a big ticket item to get teachers to think how to use this kind of technology, especially if they're living in a web-only world.
Yeah, and that's been the biggest, you know, as we're looking at a one-to-one here in our district, you know, that's been the biggest thing that that's the first thing that anybody ever says is, well, we got to make sure that the teachers are on board, because mm-hmm. we've done a lot of studying and looking at a lot of different programs, and all of the unsuccessful one-to-one programs are the ones where teachers do the same thing but use laptops instead.
Right.
You know, so it really requires a huge shift in pedagogy and in mm-hmm. the way that you view teaching and learning in order to use these really powerful tools effectively.
Right. So, yeah, that's obviously something to keep in mind, and it's kind of a package deal. I mean, you've got to get all the pieces moving together in this make-sense fashion for this to really be successful. The students have to get it. The teachers have to get it. The administration has to be behind it. Parents need to be behind it for this to be successful. And so as a result, there needs to be a lot of planning and careful steps taken, regardless of whether it's a Chromebook or a netbook or an iPad or whatever. So I'd like to learn a little bit more after the interview here, Jason, about, you said iPads in the hands of preschoolers. I'm wondering how that experience has been. But before we do that, let's play the interview with Peter Iles, principal at Grace Lutheran School in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Peter, thanks for joining. I appreciate, first of all, the time you spent with me today. I was able to spend a good morning with your 7th and 8th grade class and saw you do a history lesson and some other things that kind of showed off the use of your Chromebooks. Maybe tell our audience a little bit about yourself before we jump into discussing the Chromebooks. You know, where are you from? How long you've been here? What you do here?
Sure. Well, thank you very much. My name is Peter Iles, and I've been serving as principal and 7th and 8th grade teacher for the last 3 years. I served as 1 year as 7th grade teacher before I graduated, following my graduation at MLC in 2007. I grew up just outside of Lake Mills, Wisconsin. My father was a pastor at St. John's Newville, and now he serves with Wisconsin Lutheran Institutional Ministries and serves local correctional facilities in that capacity. Right now, I teach Christlight, U.S. history, math, algebra, and gym and computer class. And so my own kind of love of technology and education really kind of pieced those two together to deliver the Chromebook solution in our classroom.
You have a family here?
I do. My lovely wife, Rebecca, teaches preschool at Eternal Love in Appleton. She's the daughter of Bob Wilkie, who's the pastor at Zion in Columbus. Okay. And then we have one son. He is 2 and a half. His name is Aiden. And then we're also expecting our second child, a little girl, in January.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Make life a little more complicated, too.
Just a little.
So one reason that I'm here and I wanted to talk with you is, first of all, to see the classroom. But you know, thanks for sharing some time with our audience, too, about your experiences with Google's Chromebook. So maybe for those who don't know what a Chromebook is, describe how it's different than, let's say, a netbook or a regular laptop or notebook computer.
Certainly. So on the outside, it would appear to be a regular traditional laptop in every sense of the word. It is slightly smaller than a traditional laptop. It has a 12-inch screen. So if you think between a netbook and a laptop is kind of the Chromebook mm-hmm. space. But when you power on the device, that's when the first kind of change appears. And so to put it as simply as possible, it is a web browser. And that is all that you have at your fingertips. And it's Google's Chrome web browser. So when you sign on with a Google account, which if you have Gmail or Google Docs or those kinds of things, that's the account that you're using. And when you turn on, that's what you sign in with. And then it gives you just an internet browsing experience.
And it's very quick and speedy. It's using a solid-state drive. There's not a lot of onboard storage, so it's very quick to load up, and that's very important in a classroom, I would think.
Yeah, it's excellent to have. I can have my students get their Chromebooks, open them up, and actually be logged in and ready to do something in probably under 60 seconds, which the actual boot-up time for the Chromebook is 8 seconds from the off position. If it's in sleep mode, it instantly turns on.
Okay.
So that is extremely important for us in classroom transition time.
Sure.
But
it might take them longer than that to find a page in a textbook.
Right? Certainly, or their notebooks in their desk.
Right.
And then the battery life is incredible as well. You know, using these Chromebooks all day, they have anywhere between 8.5 and 10 hours of battery. So there's never an issue of our students and their Chromebooks dying, because we plug them in and lock them and store them and charge them every night. So, you know, the battery issue isn't a concern at all.
Right. Now, it's a little bit different than just using Gmail or Google Docs. They have something called Google Apps for Education, which now you can tie or enroll a Chromebook into your account. And how does that work, and how is that helpful for you as an administrator?
So it's a web-based management panel. And so we have all of our students with accounts tied to our domain of our school. So that would be graceoshkosh.net. And so all of our students receive an email address with the first letter of their first name and then their last name. And then we can determine what services they can and cannot use through this web-based management console. And one facet of that is the Chrome operating system. So through that, I can control a wide variety of options over what they're capable of seeing and using app-wise and website-wise.
So what kinds of apps do you have available to them? Describe maybe by a couple subject matters how you use them or how they use them.
Mm-hmm. So one of the most important things that we wanted to focus on was digital creation of content. And so we have a number of the standard apps like Google Docs, where we can create spreadsheets and documents, Word documents, presentations. They have the Gmail app so that they can email assignments back and forth, collaborate. We've found a number of very helpful apps and extensions in the web store. For instance, one is a Typing Club, where it's a free online keyboarding site that allows our students to practice their typing. And then there are other, basically, shortcuts to other places, online presentations like Prezi.com. There's the Khan Academy app and extension, which directs them to our online math curriculum. So there are so many. Sometimes we discover them, and what's really incredible about the Chromebook is there was one day in class where I had found this online collaboration mind mapping website. And it was just not working as well as I had hoped. And so I dove quickly into my management console, and I found a better one called Poplet. And I was able to push that down to all the devices within a matter of minutes. And mid-class, I was able to transition them over to this better mind mapping concept website.
Mm-hmm.
And they took right to it. So.
Nice.
So, I mean, that kind of change just isn't possible in a traditional computer lab environment where this is the program we have installed.
Right.
And if I want to push that down to all the devices, I have to manually go to each device and install it. Or, you know, if you have a more sophisticated setting, I have to install that. Here, I adjust a few lines of code, and it's already pushed down to the devices automatically.
Okay. So describe the kids' reaction, you know, to the Chromebooks.
Well, initially it was, of course, elation, joy, weeping. You know, they were very excited. However, they were very quickly disappointed that they were all black, and your white Chromebook did not help with that.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, but that's okay. But I think they still, on a daily basis, ask, "Are we going to use them?" And you know, just for the sake of traditional learning practices, we don't always use them for our traditional classes, and so they still get disappointed, and we're 2 months into the school year. The excitement I've seen from home has been even more amazing. The parents feel so proud of what their kids are doing online and what our school is trying to do, because they know that we have something here in Oshkosh that no other public school has. There are other traditional laptop approaches in our district, but nothing quite like this. And so the amount of praise that we've received from our parents of our school and how prideful they are when speaking with people from other schools here in Oshkosh is really impressive.
Right.
Yeah.
How has it changed the way you teach, or has it?
It has radically changed it, and that's, of course, only speaking with 4 years of experience.
Right.
But I'm comfortable in a lecture-style environment, question and answer and those kinds of things. And so introducing the Chromebook, you know, is not conducive to that. And so what I've been trying to do more is to let go and let these students create on their own. And so if that means, you know, recording their own podcasts or collaborating in documents in real time, you know, that's what we want to do. Because I know that when you make something that you're proud of, that's a meaningful experience.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to work up on, you know, that taxonomy of thinking, you know, to go from the lower level thinking of recall and assessment all the way up to evaluation and then creation. And so that's where I see a shift in my own teaching, from where I'm going to stop being the expert on everything, you know, the sage on the stage approach.
Right.
And I want to move towards letting them create something and then determine, based on a set of guidelines and objectives, is that acceptable?
Sure.
You know, did I meet the objectives of the class or the assignment? So it is an everyday alteration of my pedagogy.
Right. How has the rest of the faculty adapted or adopted it?
I think it's been very positive. You know, one thing that is excellent with the adoption of the Chromebooks is it is such a simple device. It does one thing: browse the web. And I think we're at a stage where almost everyone is comfortable in a web browser.
Right.
So without throwing this incredibly high-tech device with all of these parts and capabilities, I can give a Chromebook to a teacher and say, if you can do it on the web, you can do it with your students. And that has really simplified their vantage point of the whole device and the whole experience. So the other teachers that actively use them have only increased what they want to do with them.
Right. Well, I'm sure it hasn't been all Shangri-La, you know, through the implementation.
Mm-hmm.
What annoyances or what things are you struggling with to get done using them,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to maybe a traditional laptop or a computer lab even?
Mm-hmm. I think one of the annoyances has been, since we are so new in this whole process, we've noticed some kind of irregularities with the actual payment of the plan.
Mm.
We get bills at very odd intervals. And so I've been speaking with Google and their billing department. They're trying to sort that out. They
right.
understand it too. That's been an oddity. But overall, I would say the one thing that has been the biggest struggle is helping our families understand the process for obtaining the information at home. You know, our students are very good with, I log into my Chromebook and I get right to my information. And because of the Google Apps for Education environment, it's not so straightforward at
right.
home. For instance, if you go to gmail.com, you cannot log in with your Google Apps account. You have to go to the Google Apps Grace Oshkosh domain and then log in. So trying to educate our families, I would, early on in the year, I would get phone call after phone call. We're trying to log in, but he knows his password. He cannot get in. And the frustrating part for me was that I can't physically go there. I sent out letter after letter after email and tried to guide our families. But It's a learning process for everyone,
right?
And one that I don't think will continue.
Sure.
But that has been the biggest struggle for right now. It's not the actual devices. The devices have worked almost flawlessly. Mm-hmm. It's educating our own people on this is a brand new perspective on our education.
Right. That's also one of the benefits. The kids don't have to take the Chromebooks home. They can go to their home computer mm-hmm. and load up the site and see their homework and do work without having to lug, you know, a piece of hardware mm-hmm. that the school owns back and forth where it could get dropped or lost or whatever.
Yeah, we have eradicated the excuse I left my homework at home. Right. However, we have noticed a slight increase in the amount of arguments that my internet was down.
Ah, okay.
So I couldn't work on it.
That's the new dog ate my homework.
Exactly right. My internet was down. And so, you know, we understand that. That's going to happen from time to time. However, if it continues to happen at an increasing interval, I may have to talk with some local ISPs right. and ask them about their extreme outages.
That's right.
that appear to be occurring.
But yeah, from every evening from 6 to 10.
It's incredible. It just drops right out. So, but no, overall, the devices are extremely stable and you know, working from home, our students are mm-hmm. what appears to be happy to do it.
Right.
You know.
You mentioned the issues with billing. What is the cost for Chromebook?
So right now, the plan that we are signed up for, we are signed with a 3-year contract, and it is a lease-to-own contract. So at the end of the 3 years, we will own devices, and we pay $20 a month per device. Mm-hmm. And so that equates to, we have 20 devices, so that equates to $400 a month we pay. And then that includes a 3-year warranty and the management system, which allows me to block apps and extensions in the Chrome Web Store and then also filter a number of other settings on the devices. And it includes 24/7 tech support, either by email or by phone.
Okay. Then at the end of the 3 years, I assume you'll continue, and then you get another, you could add to your fleet. You know, add another 20 if you want to continue to use these.
Mm-hmm.
They could stay in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, so at the end of the 3 years, if you do not choose to re-up, you keep the device, but you lose the management
console.
That's okay. Correct. So there is, you know, we'll certainly reevaluate at that point, and, you know, perhaps we'll be ready for a bigger step.
Sure.
But, you know, at the very least, we can use those devices and perhaps filter them down into the lower grades.
Mm-hmm.
And for a much more simplified task. But, you know, that's one thing that's really neat about the Chromebooks is that they are so very iterative.
Mm-hmm.
The operating system is updated automatically about once a month. And as long as it continues to run Google's Chrome web browser, it's a fully functioning device.
Sure.
And so, you know, I don't see the internet going away anytime okay. soon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I don't... we did have some people in our decision meetings, you know, say, well, the device in 3 years will be obsolete because of the hardware. But if it runs a web browser and we're going to be living in the web, in the cloud for years and years to come, I don't think that's really a concern, nor is it a valid reason to not do anything.
Sure.
You know, you could say, well, technology is just going to change, so I'll go live in a cave,
mm-hmm.
you know, but that wouldn't be very effective.
Right. So you're in the first few months of using this. What do you see in the future? Where is this all headed for you guys?
I see us dismantling our traditional computer lab.
Mm-hmm.
I see labs, and I see the computer on the desk, the laptop on the desk, becoming second nature.
Mm-hmm.
I held a meeting last night with some of our technology members, and they were in agreement that really the mini labs, you know, being in the classrooms and these devices being easily passed along and shared is really an interesting focal point. And that's what I see for our school. You know, we're already in the talks of perhaps we need to get even more devices next summer and expand into lower grades because it's been so effective. And speaking to our technology overseer last night, who runs our server and maintains our environment here, he asked me, you know, how much time do you spend managing these? And I said, you know, I think since school started 2 months ago, maybe an hour. And, you know, he just kind of was shocked, you know, because, in his mind, managing a server environment in his business takes a full-time job.
Right.
And here we have these books deployed, and they basically set it and forget it.
Right.
You know, and I could deploy 4,000 Chromebooks as easily as I deploy 20. And so from his perspective of time, it's an incredible gain, you know, that he doesn't have to devote his own volunteer time
sure.
to manage these. And, you know, while I have little time, my knowledge of these devices makes it very easy for me to manage them sure. without the need to call in somebody.
Sure. Peter, thank you very much for your time and allowing me to come in and visit with your class. Very educational for mm-hmm. me and hopefully for our listeners as well. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for coming.
My thanks again, many thanks again to Peter and the kids in the 7th and 8th grade classroom at Grace Lutheran in Oshkosh, Wisconsin for treating me to a morning of education and a really good experience for me. I really appreciated their hospitality and Peter's time to take with me to do the interview. Just maybe a follow-up, Jason and Sally, on pricing. We mentioned before the interview that the standard pricing model is $20 a month per Chromebook.
And that's $720 over the 3-year time period, and then right. you own the Chromebooks at that point.
Exactly. Right. But then you own them, but if you wanted to continue to have them as part of the administrative console where you can centrally manage them, then you have to renew. But what would happen is that Google would send you a new one after 3 years. So technology advances, and you can either add the old Chromebook, keep the old Chromebooks going, or retire them, or do whatever you want, sell them to parents or kids, and they can use them just as a laptop, or keep them in the fleet and add new ones if you want going forward. But there is an alternate pricing model that Google has recently made available that's a little bit cheaper, but it costs a little bit more up front. So you can pay a fee up front. And I don't have those numbers in front of me. Sally, do you have those?
I've got it, yeah. Okay. It looks like the education pricing is $449 plus $5 a month per user for the management and support in years 2 and 3. So
right.
that covers the first year with the $449. And then, anyway, it works out to $569 versus the
$720. Yep.
But then you're paying all of that money up front, and the $20 a month per computer sounds a lot more appealing budget-wise.
It depends on your situation. If you have, like Peter mentioned, if you have a large gift, which is what funded their purchase, then it may make sense to do the upfront, because then you're saving
money over
the course of time. But if it's something that you're maybe baking into a technology fee or something, and you don't have that capital cost, depending on how many you're purchasing, on how low into the grades you want to go, it may make sense to go one way versus the other. So different options. That's probably smart of Google to give folks some different options.
Very good.
Jason, tell me a little bit about your iPads with preschoolers. I'm interested to know how that works.
Well, we're just kind of just getting into it, but we have we start special education. We identify kids at birth already, and they start receiving services already mm-hmm. as soon as they're infants. And our preschool room is actually a SPED classroom, so there are a lot of assistive apps that we use with them, getting them to communicate. Whether it's using one of our favorite apps is Tap to Talk, it's completely free and. Mm-hmm. You can for a fee, you can subscribe to them and be able to create your own library of things. And but it's basically one of those assistive technologies where the child can touch a picture, and then the iPad talks.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a dual purpose. It's a communication tool, and it's also one of those tools that gets them to recognize what the text is, and that, you know, the getting to identify the way that words sound, and identifying the pictures with those kinds of things. But that's the main use that we have of them, is as an assistive technology. And they also do a lot of really neat things with interactive storybooks. Mm-hmm. Their favorite one is there's a Grover, the monster at the end of this book with Grover in it. And I know it's like $3.99 or something like that, and the kids just love it. You know, they'll go through, and it highlights the words as it's reading them, and mm-hmm. you know, you can make Grover, no, don't go on to the next page, and you know, he'll pretend like he's all scared and everything. So, you know, it's entertaining, but at the same time, it's helping them to make those word and sound associations, and helping them develop those really critical skills. Mm-hmm. And especially for those younger kids with special needs, you know, the more modalities we can tap into, the better it's going to work for them.
Okay. Very interesting. I'm sure there's a whole process to keep those suckers clean once they're in
the hands. That's not my job. Kid sneezes on it. I'm not there with hand sanitizer and Clorox.
Or pulls the fingers out of the mouth directly to the iPad. But,
oh, yeah, yeah, no. That's, yep.
All right. Thank you for sharing, Jason. Appreciate it. Let's move on to our picks of the week. Jason, you're our now semi-regular guest. Why don't you go first?
Sure. My pick for this week is a website called ck12.org. This website actually came out of the California Public Schools Initiative, where Arnold told them that they needed to start using electronic textbooks.
You need to start using electronic textbooks.
Very good.
So they developed all of these open source resources for math and science, and you know, there's engineering in here, history, nanotechnology, I see, SAT prep. So there are all kinds of resources that they developed, and you are completely free to download these ebooks, whatever, you know, resources you find in here, take them, use them, adapt them. They're completely free. Creative Commons license, so you know, you can use them however you want. And I also see on their website that you can download in iPad and Kindle format. So if you have, you know, like, let's say Chromebooks, you can download them for Kindle, and then they would be available through the cloud reader,
right.
Sure. For Kindle, and then, you know, kids could have access to their textbooks no matter where they're at.
Interesting.
Okay. I played with the site a little bit yesterday, Jason, after you tipped us off to this being your pick. And if you create a teacher account, you can actually pull out chapters of the book, not just the books, but individual chapters or topics that you want to share with your students. And you can do it from multiple books and make a mashup book from all their resources. So it's really versatile.
So is this, yeah, under, cool, is this under some kind of Creative Commons license so that you mm-hmm. can repurpose these?
Yep. Yeah. You can use and reuse and redistribute and all of that. It's a pretty extensive resource right now, and I know that they're continuing development on it. So I know it's only going to keep on going.
Interesting. Yeah, and I'm sure there are all kinds of these initiatives out there as we get into more of this one-to-one computing. This makes a lot of sense to me. So.
Yeah, and especially if you're in your one-to-one environment, if you're using a learning management system like Moodle, mm-hmm. this would be an incredibly valuable thing to just say, you know, okay, here's the unit that we're doing. Here's the link to the chapter.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you can just read it right there on the device that you're doing your work on.
Sweet. So much cheaper, so much easier to update and keep current as well. Makes all the sense in the world.
Yep.
Sally, what's your pick this week?
Well, probably a bit of a departure for our education discussion, but I came across a cool website, just had to share it. It's called Autodesk Homestyler, and it's basically a 3D room planner, so you can draw out floor plans and then add all kinds of furnishings and things, and it's totally free. You can create an account and save your drawings, and you can actually share links to them. You can make 3D versions as well as snapshots and panoramics, so you can like turn around the whole room that you've designed, and then you can actually embed it on websites as well. So you may be asking yourself, what's the ministry application here, Sally, with a 3D room designer? But I thought, you know, some people may be doing new designs for their school or church. Maybe you're rearranging your church office or something along those lines. So it's just nice to have this kind of tool in your arsenal. It's web-based and free, so you can't beat the pricing. And it's really cool. The interaction with the system is very intuitive, and the graphics are excellent. So maybe you have a student who's interested in architecture or design, and this would be a neat website to share with them as well.
Well, I know my wife rearranges the 8th grade classroom at school, so this might be a tool that would help her figure out what might optimize that experience. So,
and also the best carpeting and wall colors as well. It's all there.
Beautiful. All right,
Sally. Sally,
Jason.
Your pick also reminds me of something else. The company that puts that out, Autodesk, they offer their 2D and 3D design software free to schools. So. Uh-huh. I'll send you a link to that. You can get that
in
the show notes. Yeah.
Awesome. Very good. Thank you.
Okay, my pick. I already tipped my hand a little bit. It is a hardware pick this week, and it is the Samsung Chromebook. And I've had this for about a month and a half now at this point. And I forget what the price was. I bought it straight off of Amazon. I couldn't actually go through the Google lease program, you know, the $20 a month. So I had to actually buy one, and then they got me hooked up into their management console. But I think they're running $450 something
like
that.
Yeah, I think they're $449.
Yep.
Through Amazon.
And I got the Samsung one. It's called Samsung Chromebook Series 5. Really a nice device. It doesn't feel plasticky or cheap as you might think it might. It's got a 12-inch screen, and the viewing angles are very good on this. You can hold it almost 90 degrees and still see the screen. It's as I mentioned, it gets great battery life, 8.5 hours of continuous use. We talked about the boot time; it's up in 10 seconds. The processor, while not overly beefy, I think is sufficient for web apps. It's a Intel Atom N570 processor. There's 2 gigabytes of RAM, and as I also mentioned, 16 gigabyte SSD hard drive. You of course have an audio jack on it, a headphone jack that you plug your headphones in. It does obviously have that SD card slot here where you can plug that in. It also has a place where you can plug in a kind of an adapter to a projector. So you could project the screen if you wanted to do that. It has that USB jack, and I guess the biggest knock would be the audio is not real great, although typically in a classroom you're not going to be using it to play audio. Putting in the headphone jack would work fine, and then the audio is just fine. Another neat thing about it is the keyboard. It's got special keys. It's not your regular keyboard, so you don't have your function keys. But in their place, you have kind of browser-friendly keys, like full screen, refresh, back and forward buttons. You have your audio keys and your screen brightness right up there as well with one key press. Also, you don't have a caps lock key. That has been replaced by a search key, which makes some sense if you're doing a lot of web browsing, just hitting the search key. And away you go. You have your control, your alt keys, a backspace key, you know, the basic stuff. And that instant on is really a nice thing to have, where you can just set it down, open it, and away you go. We don't need to go into the Chrome store, the web store, and those kinds of things, although that was just updated today. If you haven't visited the web store, take a look. Brand new facelift, much more visual through that process of getting apps onto your console, your apps console. It comes in black and white, and nice-looking device. Very, very thin, very, I think, well-constructed, and I think a pretty good value. Some would say maybe pretty overpriced for a web browser, but I think in the educational context, it makes some sense.
And did yours come with the warranty and the support and everything?
It comes with a one-year warranty through Amazon or through Samsung.
Okay.
But it doesn't. There's no real connection to Google, basically.
Okay.
So it's basically Samsung selling a Google-enabled or it's kind of like a cell phone in that regard, where you can get an Android phone, you know, through a Samsung carrier.
Okay.
But Samsung's really going to provide the support for this. So it's a little bit different than the program that Google has, which essentially uses the devices that Acer and Samsung are creating. But good product.
Very good.
Let's move on to community feedback. Oh, no, we skipped ministry resources, didn't we? Let's rewind.
Flew right past those ministry resources. A couple of things to share there. First is a voicemail we received from Gail. We were missing Gail on this show, but she actually phoned in and is part of our show as well.
Here's Gail.
Hi, Martin and Sally. This is Gail Potraff, and I just have received an email today reminding me of something that I wanted to pass along to you that I'm sure the listeners would be interested in. Next weekend, October 30th and 31st, YouVersion, our favorite online Bible program, is offering for free their downloadable version of the NIV and one other translation. And that means that you don't have to be near Wi-Fi or online, and you'll still be able to use the Bible while you're on your phone or other device. So they do this every once in a while. And I missed it last time, so I'm for sure going to do it this time around and wanted to make sure that other people know it was available. So thanks for passing that along.
Very good.
And thank you, Gail, that's a great tip. So again, that was, what was it, the 29th through the 31st, did she say?
Mm-hmm. Yep, and we'll have a link in the show notes to the YouVersion announcement on that. So you get all the details.
Yep, and I did that last time, and really helpful because you're not always within Wi-Fi range, so it's good to have that local version of the NIV. So, And then we had a Reformation-focused ministry resource. Sally.
That's right, just in time for all those plans for Bible class for this coming weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Melanie Shanick, who's the church secretary at Morning Star in Jackson, Wisconsin, wrote asking if there were any royalty-free, copyright-free images of Martin Luther and the major events of his life, like the 95 Theses, the Diet of Worms, etc. And we found a good selection, basically from two different sources, from the Library of Congress online image resources, just doing some searches there on different Martin Luther-type terms, and then also from Wikipedia and their image repository, Wikimedia Commons. There's several royalty-free images shared there related to Martin Luther. Mm-hmm. So check out the links in the show notes, and hopefully that'll be a help to you as you plan for Bible class this weekend.
Yeah, the whole Library of Congress archive there was, I was not aware of that, and Julie Duran, one of staff here in the Synod Administration Building, pointed that out to us, that boy, there's just a ton of, these are physical prints that have been scanned in that the Library of Congress now maintains, but you know, some very old pieces of artwork
that's
that they've made available, just awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, we can move on to community feedback.
That's right. Several DIGO links were shared this week, I think mainly by you two guys. First of all, to a WordPress site for Fount of Life. I'm not sure if this is a Wells Church or not, but it's a congregation that's using WordPress for their church website. And Martin, you thought it was well done and a good example of making use of WordPress capabilities.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think while it's not necessarily the prettiest site, I think there are, and I think this is Wells.
Yeah, I believe so.
But they're making use of a lot of different features. So what strikes me is you could go back here and always find something new, you know, some new information. So it's more a testament to just the dedication of the people behind the site and using some of the tools. For instance, they have a weekly poll, which I think is a great idea if you can do it. Very easy to do. It's engaging. You can vote and then view the results. This is mostly for members. So, for instance, the vote or the poll this week was, is it time to get back to two services? So apparently they're at one service and now they're thinking about going back to two, and you've got different answers there. Obviously, they have, you know, the video and the calendar and all that stuff. But I think this is a good example of how to use the web to communicate, especially to your internal audience, your congregation members.
Looks like it's a Colorado-based congregation.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, Pastor Wayne Woolhorn is there.
Okay. Next up, digital literacy and citizenship classroom curriculum. Boy, that's a tongue twister. This is from Common Sense Media. Yep. Jason, maybe you want to tell us about this a little.
Yeah, sure. Common Sense Media is a nonprofit organization that puts together all kinds of their mission is to help parents and teachers educate kids about how to conduct themselves online. So this website has a free curriculum, activities, parent letters, all kinds of different things that you can use to help teach digital citizenship. And that's one of those things that is it's really important for us to do that. With more and more of our lives online and more and more of our interactions taking place online, we need to teach kids how to conduct themselves. Just like, you know, how we still have to teach them to look both ways before they cross the street. You know, we got to teach them not to give out their passwords to people that they don't know.
Right.
And those kinds of things. And, yep. And, you know, things that are less obvious than that as well. But this is a great resource for opening up that dialogue and having something going with between parents and teachers and making those connections and really just helping kids learn what to do.
This looks like they cover a lot of topics. I see cell phones, digital communication, cyberbullying, gaming, family media management, violence in media, and on and on. And they have a curriculum for all different grade levels, K through 12.
Mm-hmm. So. K to 12, yeah.
I saw this in action when I went up to Grace Lutheran in Oshkosh. Peter Isles was using this in his classroom for their curriculum. And the lesson that I observed was on creating strong passwords. And they had a whole fact sheet on that. And then one of the exercises was pick a historical figure and write three passwords, both strong and weak, that those figures might have created or crafted. Very interesting exercise. I talk about it a little bit in the blog post about my experience up there. But and then I asked him, well, where do you get that stuff? Where do you come up with that stuff over lunch? And he said, well, Common Sense Media. And really cool. Makes a difference in the lives of students to kind of make it an engaging experience, and that's what was done. I think that's what's done through this curriculum. So, good.
Excellent. All right, Facebook by the Numbers was the next link that was shared. This is an infographic. We like those infographics, and it comes from the Mashable website, mm-hmm. and it's a big, large image that talks about all different kinds of Facebook user information. Martin, maybe you shared this one as well, or
I did, and you know, not much more to say other than, yeah, again, it's one of those fancy infographics that puts the statistics into a graphical or a, kind of a friendly format where it's kind of fun to read about. There's a section called Random Stats about Facebook users. 56% of Americans think it's irresponsible to friend your boss on Facebook. 83% of women are annoyed by their Facebook friends. And just kind of random facts. It's kind of fun reading.
Yeah, I like the non-internet brands we like, which includes Coca-Cola, Disney, and Oreo cookies is in the top five. So there you go. The yep. pulse of America, or the pulse of the world, I guess, through Facebook.
That's so. Right. There Starbucks is on there, too, of course.
And a fun search engine, Jason, that you shared. It's called What Do You Love? It's done by our friends at Google. And what do you get from What Do You Love?
Well, I just found out about this yesterday at my laptop, my state laptop schools meeting. And it's really neat. Basically what it is a Google search engine, but it does it in a little bit more visual way. And doesn't just pull up articles and text, but it'll pull up images, it'll pull up videos, it'll pull up, forums and interactive kinds of places where you can go. And it's really actually quite neat. I found I did a search for dogs and, found videos about, puppies doing tricks and, the dog that says, I love you. That one came up real high in the results. But one of those really, that's a really neat way, I think, to do, some of that web exploration and searching with kids.
Yeah, it is cool.
Obviously you've got to be careful about what fits in with your filtering and what's going to be allowed and what's not going to be allowed to come through. But I would imagine if you had a safe search on and did that search, I think you could do some really neat things with this.
It looks like there's some standard modules that they use. So I typed in Chromebooks, for instance. So you can explore Chromebooks in 3D, watch videos of Chromebooks, start a Chromebooks discussion group, find books about Chromebooks, call someone or email someone about Chromebooks, search Chromebook blogs, plan your Chromebooks events, organize debate about Chromebooks, see pictures of Chromebooks. This could be very useful as a research tool, I would think, in a classroom setting, or for anybody just looking to find out what the web says about their particular passion.
Kind of broadens your look at it because it's more graphical. And
nice
find.
Nicely done.
A couple of Twitter Wells Tech tweets. One was from Rachel Pearson, who teaches at Trinity in Waukesha, and she was wondering if anyone was going to be tweeting from the Wisconsin Lutheran State Teachers Conference next week. Actually,
this week.
Maybe this week,
yep.
Thursday through Friday. And so if you're there and want to share what's happening, keep us in the loop. Be sure to tweet it with #WellsTech. We'd love to keep up to date on all the happenings at the Teachers Conference.
That'd be great. And blessings on everybody going to that, and both the instructors, the workshop leaders, and all the teachers there.
And then we heard from Marin McPeak, who is at St. Mark in Citrus Heights, California, and she tweeted that Final Web will install a single user of WordPress if you want to switch to a WordPress blog on your Final Web site. So you certainly can work with Final Web support to get any specialized installations on your domain, and this is just one example. I think I was talking highly of WordPress last week and how versatile it is for all different types of websites. And if you'd want to make use of it on your Final Web domain, then certainly contact their support and they'll work with you to get that done. Thanks, Marin, for that tip.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, there was one link shared via Delicious, and I apologize, I missed this link. This was from about a month ago, and it's to an editorial in a theological magazine I wasn't familiar with. It's called Themalus. And it's an international journal for pastors and students of theological and religious studies. An editorial done by D.A. Carson. And I think it's a worthy read. I don't know, Martin, if you had a chance to look this over.
I did not.
It's kind of over my head a little bit. But taking a look at technology and our use of technology and how ensnarled we are, how it's so much of our culture now to be online and to be sharing socially and what the repercussions of that might be. So check it out. Maybe give us some feedback if you have a chance to read it.
Very good. Thank you, everybody, for sharing. Please contribute to the show. We love hearing from you. There are so many ways to do that, so many easy ways to do that. Just go to our website, wellstech.wells.net, for all those things. Look at the icons across the top right, and you can see all kinds of ways to get in touch with us. You mentioned Delicious, which we don't hear much from these days, but that's still an avenue. DGO is the one that we use mostly here. There's a Facebook page at facebook.com/WellsTech. The Twitter tag, #WellsTech, and that'll get you get information to us on the show. And send us a voicemail, 405 for Wells. That's 405-367-9357. We would love to get more audio comments onto the show. And old trusty email is available as well, wellstech@wells.net. Well, that is going to about do it for the show this week. Next week, we're going to be talking about a topic that everybody, every congregation at least, needs to deal with in some way, shape, or form, and that's a ministry to shut-ins. How do we get God's word to those shut-ins using the technological means that we have today, whether that be a tape ministry or now CDs or DVDs or online or whatever it is. How do we manage our visitations to them, et cetera, et cetera. So all things shut-ins next week. And we'll also be having Josh Johnson from Nebraska Lutheran High School.
And got a Nebraska theme going here.
And we do. and Greg Boggs, who we've had on the show before, talking about a product called Smoothwall, which is a new entry into the lineup that is ShopWells. Basically content filtering and malware and virus protection. So tune in next week for that as well. Jason, thank you very much for joining us this week.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was fun.
We look forward to having you back again. Let's close the show with the music of Crosswalk Lutheran Ministries, their song, Dive Into God's Word. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.